All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, welcome to this is American Vindicta. So, I'm going to hit on a bunch of stuff on the news today, but I want to first give the update on the active shooter that happened at the Dallas International Airport. Now, Dallas PD was almost immediately on the scene because they have roving officers within the area. A unknown female at this point in time went into the Dallas International Airport. She changed over into different clothing, potentially something with a hood to, I guess, mask her face, and then pulled out a handgun and started firing indiscriminately. She didn't strike anybody. Supposedly she had struck the roof, and then within a matter of seconds, a officer was nearby and struck the suspect, hitting her in, I'm guessing, within the abdomen area or within the legs. So before I get any further into this, let's hear what the Dallas police chief has to say about it.
All right, there's just a couple things that I want to start off with. Number one, we're going to tell you the facts as we know it to this point. Not only might they change, they probably will as we look into this investigation even further. But I'm going to tell you what I know at the current time. The second part about it is at this time, we will not be taking any questions until we get all the facts of the case. But today, this morning, at about 10:59, a 37-year-old woman gets dropped off, goes inside near the ticket counters in front of Southwest, goes at one point into a restroom, exits the restroom. Now she's either put some sort of hoodie on or some other different type of clothing that she had when she walked in. At some point, simultaneously, one of our officers is in the area. She produces a handgun and begins firing. At this point, we don't know where exactly the individual was aiming. For the most of what we're seeing now, she was aiming at the ceiling. But there was several rounds that are found. Simultaneously, as she's doing that, our officer engages the suspect, strikes her in the lower extremities. She's taken into custody and is currently at Parkland Hospital. No other individuals were injured in this event other than the suspect, who, again, is at Parkland. That's all we have right now, but we wanted to ensure that our community knows that this is not an active situation. We want to make sure our community knows that there are no other passengers, family members, or people in the airport that have been that are victims, and that's what we got at this time. Thank you very much.
All right, so here's a couple things. For starters, thank you very much, Chief, for giving us that type of a briefing. You know, I appreciate it when we have our leadership in law enforcement who clearly communicates with the public and doesn't give me fluff. I just want the facts. Right? You know, that's for everybody. One of the things that I think is being taken into consideration is how Uvalde screwed up everything for police relations with the people and the police trust. So there have been numerous other shootings that have happened since, unfortunately. And we have seen how law enforcement has picked up on what not to do, like Uvalde did, and continuously changed the subject by updating with new facts or to hide certain things. So I do like the brevity of this police chief. I do appreciate the fact that he comes out and says, hey, look, guys, I'm going to give you the facts. I'm not going to give you any fluff. I'm not going to tell you any stories. This is what happened, and we're not taking any questions because I don't want the dialogue spun in any direction. Smart move, sir. Good job. That is police relationships and communications with the public. That's how it's supposed to go. Short, fast, crisp, to the point, no questions. That way you can't take my words and twist them. Now, understand this, ladies and gentlemen. Active shooters can happen anywhere, all right? They're prone to happening a lot right now. Grocery stores, places of worship, schools, unfortunately. Also, the airports. The airports have always been kind of a symbolic attack, or they've always been kind of a symbolic target for terrorism. All right, nothing better than being able to take down a plane as it's landing or as it's taking off. But if you've been into the Dallas International Airport, and I have flown, oh gosh, probably 20 times out of that place. It's a huge airport, multiple different places that you can be dropped off at. But just like every airport, whenever you go into the area where you can be dropped off at, and then you have the checking aisle. All right, so you had to go up to the ticketing booth. You had to get your tickets if you're law enforcement or if you're, you know, carrying firearms. You have to go to TSA and have that checked in. Then you go through the screening portals. So up until the point that you are past the screening portals, you are within the area of danger. All right. So that means while you're in and about, understand that as you're flying, all right, there are not that much law enforcement present. Now, I flew armed. Obviously not in uniform. That's a thing that federal gets to do between DHS, a couple other agencies that they, you know, would like to volunteer on that program. Most federal agencies, I would say, fly armed. So, you know, we have another place where we go and check in at. We don't check in where everyone else is because when we fly armed, we can't go through the X-ray and magnetometer with a gun on us and then have everyone look at us funny. All right, so we go around, and there's certain things and certain, I guess you say, there's certain things that we have to do in order to bypass that security. But it's the way law enforcement flies, all right? We have different things that we do. I'm not going to get into that. But understand this. While you're at that X-ray machine, all the way to the point that you get dropped off, that is where most likely, if there's going to be an attack, it's going to happen there. All right. It's probably not going to happen in the food court areas because they've already passed security. If it is, it's more likely going to be a blunt object or it's going to be some sort of a sharp object. You know, I'm not saying that the people can't compromise within the people who work there at the airport. But, you know, the average person who's flying, you're typically not going to be able to get very much by the TSA. And that may sound like a joke within itself, but the way airports are set up now are actually pretty good for their security. So just have that training mindset, that situational awareness, that when you get dropped off, don't gaff around. Get your stuff, get in, get your tickets, get in line, and get past all that. All right, that's the fastest thing you need to do is get past all that. I also want to, you know, throw another thing in there. If you hear the sound of gunfire, all right, don't let your ears confuse you. You are hearing gunfire. You're probably inside an airport. You're probably not hearing fireworks. You're probably not hearing, you know, bricks being smashed together. You're most likely hearing gunfire. And I say that because you can go back into the history of talking to people that have been in active shooter situations, and there's an element of denial right there on the very beginning. Oh, man, that's not gunfire. There would be no gunfire here in this location that I'm at. That's preposterous. And, oh, holy shit, it's gunfire. So, you know, understand that your best instincts, if you hear the pow, 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 to just start moving, just start running. Here's the other thing. If you do happen to see that, you need to make your presence very low. So that means you need to be squatting down and running and moving. The reason why I say that is if the average male in America is 5'7" to 5'9", that means that their arm is typically at about the, you know, let's say 5' to 5'5" range. Well, if they're just holding their arm out and shooting in general directions, that is the area where you want to get lower than, right? The people who will show up for the active shooter training in September out at the ready-made resources place, my active shooter training, I will teach you these tips and these techniques. I'll teach you really what it means within that active shooter situation because, you know, and here's just a freebie for everybody. The average person and within the active shooters does what we call a spray and pray, all right? So they just typically shoot in general directions. So that means, obviously, Don't get on your knees and kneel down, but squat down and start moving. Here's another tip for you. All right. We like to teach run, hide, fight. Okay. In an airport situation, you have the availability of running, hiding, and fighting because there are multiple doors, multiple cavities everywhere where people could potentially hide. But if you're right there within the main vestibule area, you're not hiding. All right. You're not going to hide. Now, I understand me saying this is not going to correlate into the idea that, you know, just because Doug says it means that it's easy to do. I'm just telling you that there are examples, proven examples within active shooter situations where people run, hide, and they fight. At a certain extent, running within the airport probably is one of your better options. Running out or trying to run away. Just remember that if you are within the airport and that active shooter starts to happen and you start to run to the area where you have the screening area, everybody's going to be funneled in like fish in a bucket. Not the place to go. More than likely, the best places to go, because everybody knows the way an airport's laid out, it's just a long linear avenue of just checkout stations. Try and go either up or down the stairs, because typically there's stairwells everywhere, in or out, depending on if the shooter is outside or if the shooter is inside. You know, and don't get your luggage either. Don't worry about your luggage. You know, I would tell you this much, your luggage is not going to be taken away from you. So, you know, my best advice is if you're, you know, far enough away from the active shooter that you can't tackle them. So that means like if you're like 20, 30 feet away from somebody, just run. Take you and your loved ones and just run. Don't get your luggage. If you were within that close proximity, you know, 20 feet and in, this is a life-changing decision here. But because 9 times out of 10, most of you who are listening, when you fly, are not going to be armed with anything more than maybe a pencil or a pen. If you take it upon yourself to engage the shooter, as long as you don't run straight at them while they're shooting at you, you actually have I think you have a fairly good chance of stopping the shooting. Now, when I say that, I mean, just think of a pack of dogs, okay? One dog is pretty brave, but the pack, you can't take the pack down. They won't back down, all right? If people thought the same way, and once again, it's a people problem, right? But if people thought the same way whenever they see an active shooter, if we all corralled it around them, people are going to get shot. That's understanding. People are going to get shot anyways. I would rather put my life in my own hands if my family's not with me, obviously. And you know what? Even if my family is with me, if I'm within close proximity, I understand my capabilities. And I understand that violence of action typically wins the day. Even with these shooters, and I can go through video after video after video of active shooters from around the world where if people were within such close proximity, if they just would have rushed the shooter, they could have overwhelmed them and they could have stopped it. You know, you're not going to stop that half a second it takes to pull the trigger. And that's when people put their own lives in their own hands, and they, you know, rightfully so, they get a little bit selfish and they think of self-preservation. But just understand that you have the ability to stop something by acting. And there's grave danger with it, obviously. But this would be my other tip here. If you do decide to confront the shooter, don't grab the barrel of the weapon. All right. If it's a rifle and you grab the barrel of the weapon, don't grab near the very end of the weapon where, the bang-bang part happens from. The best thing to do, more than likely, especially if they have any type of a sling on the weapon, like a rifle, is to grab the rifle, the sling, and drag the shooter to the ground. Obviously, beating the guy as close to death as possible, if need be, or gal, it could, equal opportunity. This shooter was a woman. I'm all about fairness here. But taking possession of the weapon and forcing it to the ground, keeping that muzzle away from other potential victims, driving the muzzle to the ground, driving the shooter to the ground, more likely almost like a, I don't want to say a judo throw, but, it's a dragging technique, more or less. You're going to grab the rifle, bum rush them, hit them, shoulder charge them, grab that rifle, grab that sling if possible, and just start yanking them all the way to the ground. And by then, people should see that and get their courage up, and they should come help you. On the offset of that, I will say that I have also seen where there was a contract security guard at a Social Security office. I remember after this event, because I was rewatching the video of it because I had to go and check on the numbskull that got arrested and do an investigation on it. But I remember watching this security guard. He was in the back part of the Social Security office. This is way back whenever you would actually get brought back into the back side of the office and you'd be at an employee's desk. And this guy was a very well-known criminal and literally right across the street from the state prison. And that's where they took him right back to. And, as soon as he got to the back, he started becoming irate, started yelling, started using a lot of profanity. And then the Social Security worker said, "All right, we're done here. I can't help you, and I'm getting nervous." She was a little old lady. And this guy stood up in her face and proceeded to bully her. Well, the security guard decided to, intervene. And when I say decided to intervene, he was standing off to the side. This whole thing took about 5 seconds. And within about 5 seconds of this guy acting up, the security guard throws himself in the way. Well, understand this, and this goes for you security guards and law enforcement out there. Whenever you get into a scuffle with somebody, and I'm sure I'm not saying anything unnormal here, when you get into a scuffle with somebody, you're going hands-on. You now have a gun in play. So you always have to remember, I can't lose the high game. That means I always need to stay on my feet or on top of the suspect, and I need to always keep my right hip or left hip, whichever hip it is that has the gun on it, away from the suspect. That's where, learning Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is really good, because you learn how to trap arms and you learn how to throw people really well. And that in wrestling. So about 8 minutes later, and I'm in 8 minutes of these two guys scuffling on the ground, punching each other numerous times in the face. And I watched, I think it was about 5 grown men. Some were elderly, some were in their 30s. 5 grown men watching these two guys rolling around on the ground, gun in play, okay? The officer's equipment's going all over the place. It's being thrown all around them, and no one stepped in to help. No one. Not one ounce of bravery was located that day. And I do recall how much ass I chewed whenever I got there and I reviewed this, because the security guard worked for my agency. So in a sense, that's kind of like our employee. And I'm just sitting here and I'm looking at these people. And I said, "Look, I understand that none of you people have a duty to act. I understand that. And I understand that you pay this, our security guard, quite a lot of money to protect your installation. I understand that. And that his job is security." So, but the day somebody incapacitates your security and takes his gun and starts killing all of you with it, it's too late to bitch. It's too late to say, "Well, what if only I could go back and change things." And so, this was one of the times where I was actually giving an active shooter class for these people, and I brought up the incident that occurred, And I specifically pointed out the employees. I said, you five guys could have overwhelmed this guy. He was small. He wasn't very big. You know, he was extremely strong, extremely feisty. But you guys could have overwhelmed him. You could have collapsed down on top of him. And I don't care at that point in time if you killed him or not. But don't let the bad guy get the good guy's gun, because the bad guy got the better of the good guy. You know, and that's real life. That happens. Just because you're a police officer, just because you're a veteran, just because you're a security professional, does not mean there's not someone out there who can best you. Even someone who doesn't have training. People get lucky. I've arrested people that were literally 1.5 times my size and still gave me problems, because when you put the full strength and adrenaline rush of the human body in play, it is a hell of a weapon to deal with, especially with people who have excited delirium, all right, ED. Excited delirium, and I've arrested people on this before. We've tased people. We've baton struck people. OC is worthless. Pepper spray, OC spray, it's damn near worthless. We've used all types of softening techniques and even hard techniques to the point that the only thing that works is it takes 5 or 6 grown men to tackle somebody and to hold their arms and legs down until this excited delirium passes, or until that person is incapacitated and in handcuffs. So why do I tell you all this? You never know when you may be in the airport, when you may be in the locker room, when you may be the greeter there in front of your church, when you may be walking through Walmart just trying to get some groceries, and you see this event happen. It doesn't just have to be a person with a gun. There are many chances where we've seen people who will literally go into places like Walmart and grab a bat, grab an axe, grab a hammer, and then start striking at people or chasing people. So the mental preparedness is probably one of the hardest things for people to overcome. Now, I got 15 years of doing it. 15 years of being, I don't want to say hyper-vigilant, but I was very hyper-vigilant. Some of us are just better at this than others, all right? And nobody holds the key to valor here, but you just got to understand that when it's time to act, it's time to act. There's no secondary thought. You can't create a secondary and tertiary situation. Sometimes the best thing to do is just to take a big object and smash the other person with it. That just is what it is, right? If someone is walking through Walmart and swinging a machete and hitting people with it, which is something that has occurred before, are you just going to stand there and watch? Or are you going to flee? Or are you going to intervene? If you're going to intervene, I don't even think Chuck Norris would do this, but don't try and go over there and catch the machete, okay? This is real life, all right? This isn't stage martial arts bull crap. That's not the way real world life happens. So I would find a object that gives me length so that I can hit the person from a further distance, or find something to collapse into that person with to incapacitate them, all right? And once again, this is a team effort. If you're doing it by yourself, that's really going to suck if you don't know what you're doing or you get caught off guard. So if you see this and you see someone acting erratic and then they're having to be confronted by other people, one of the safest things that you can do as a bystander is actually to intervene. One of the things that we teach in law enforcement is more force now, less force later. So there have been plenty of chances where I have, you know, come across a scene where, you know, it's a domestic. Two people are arguing back and forth, a husband and a wife, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. Or there will be a scene where, you know, you have someone who's disgruntled versus an employee. And it just seems like sometimes even your officer presence does not grant you access to being in control of that situation. So you need to always have the mindset of be prepared to go hands-on, guys. And that's what I used to teach my guys all the time. Just be prepared to go hands-on. I would rather you put your hands on somebody and put them into the ground and detain them then that person get out of control and hurt somebody else because of your decision to not act, right? It's better just to be safe and say, okay, you're under arrest or you're being detained. You can always back up your words, law enforcement. You can always unarrest people if need be. And I know that the civilian populace doesn't know that. But, you know, even you as a civilian, the best thing to do at times when you see that person just going crazy on the subway or on the bus, how many videos do we need to watch of this, a person just going crazy and attacking people? Everyone needs to swarm and incapacitate that person. I don't care what you have to do, but one human being can do quite a bit of damage. You never know when that guy is the next Mike Tyson and you're just sitting here, you know, letting him punch some little old lady because you're a coward and you're going to videotape it. I've seen those videos, and it's embarrassing as an American to watch that. So if you have the ability to intervene, all right, in plenty of these situations, like at the airport, you're not going to be able to carry any self-defense tools. You're not going to be able to carry your firearm on you. If you do have your firearm going into the airport, it has to be in a locked baggage. It has to go and get checked out by TSA. The ammunition typically has to be in its original container. It has to be separate from the weapon at times. So, you know, you're already walking into this at a disadvantage. But if you're not in that realm and you can carry a firearm, hello, carry a firearm. If you can't, if there's a reason why you can't carry a firearm, all right, there are options for you. Taser. Taser makes a self-defense weapon called the Taser Pulse. Obviously, everyone should be familiar with the Taser weapon. Shoots out two probes and incapacitates somebody through voltage running through the body. And here's the other thing. People with excited delirium, people that are drunk, people that are high on PCP, it doesn't always work on people. People with thick layers of clothing, the probes may not be long enough to penetrate, so that won't work either. So if you're carrying this in the civilian world as a self-defense tool, and I completely, you know, I would do it. Trust me when I say in my kit, I have a taser for that just in case situation. I'm typically a guy who's going to go hands-on with everybody, but then again, I'm comfortable with that. If you're not comfortable with that, taser does make things that, you know, you can hit somebody and give them that 5 or 10 second ride. Just understand, if you do give someone the electric slide ride and they fall and they hurt themselves, or if they fall and they kill themselves, you can still be found at fault. So that's why I keep pushing to have the concealed carry gun insurance. It covers typically all different types of uses of force for civilians, especially for even weaponry that is considered non-lethal. And once again, non-lethal is the verbiage that we use because, you know, well, excuse me, not non-lethal, less than lethal. The reason why we say less than lethal is a baton is less than lethal, but if I strike you in the neck or in the head, I could kill you with it. Or in the groin, I could kill you with it. A taser can kill somebody. Not just can it cause a heart attack potentially, which that's still, you know, people will argue that one back and forth. But, you know, it can make you fall and it can make you hit your head and then you have a seizure and you have a brain aneurysm and you die. You don't taser people over the water because, hello, you know, if you're doing the electric slide in the water, you're probably going to drown. So, you know, you have to understand these things, that if you're going to have a defense tool like this, I would get all the training that there is. And you can go to this free thing, really neat, called YouTube, and you can learn law from lawyers who grace us with their presence on YouTube, and you can actually learn a lot about Second Amendment defense and the lawyers and what they say you should and should not use. Like pistols, for example. Your everyday carry pistol should be a stock factory pistol with nothing on it. No lasers. I mean, even to the extent that I wouldn't even change the freaking the sights on it. Because defense lawyers will use that. I mean, prosecuting lawyers will use it. Lawyers in general, if you take that weapon and you modify it at all, they will use it against you. If you put a little Punisher skull on it, that's going to be used against you. If you put some funny little saying on it, that will be used against you. Same thing for your ARs. So for your rifles, your AR-15s, if you put like, you know, die mother F or die or something like that, which is an old Marine Corps saying, on your rifle, and you kill somebody with that rifle, buddy, you better believe that rifle will be shown to a grand jury and it will be used against you in a court of law. And it will work. So it's one of the reasons why, you know, I stress it, and I know attorneys stress it. Your weapon needs to be clean. Your weapon needs to be, and by clean, I mean there should be no graffiti on your weapon. There should be, you know, no modifications that have anything that speak of death or killing or hurting or maiming. I wouldn't even put something that says like Psalm 91 on it. I wouldn't do any of that. Just make it stock. Like I said, it can be used against you. All right, so we're going to go to a break real quick, and then we'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing, and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position. Really, for the first time in our history, we're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
All right, and we're back. One last quick thing for self-defense before we move on to other news. If you're afraid of pistols, there is a pistol self-defense weapon that is called the Byrna self-defense weapon. You can get them on Amazon for like $500. You can also go to Byrna's website. I strongly recommend this to the extent that, you know, this is something that I would own. This is something that I'm going to own. Let's say it like that. Because the ability to have a less than lethal option with your lethal option is always going to be the better choice, all right? You never know when, you know, you just have that ability to be able to, you know, hit somebody with CS gas and OC mix paintballs and really take them down, especially if you don't like weapons or if you're in a state where you're not allowed to bring that, all right? If you're in a location where you can't bring it, always make sure you travel and check your local laws, because not all of America is free. But I will say this. You can go to Byrna, B-Y-R-N-A, and you can look it up on YouTube at the results of the impact rounds, the CS, OC mixed rounds, which that is nasty stuff. It's so effective that whenever we were in Portland for the riot control stuff, I actually had reached out to them and tried to purchase a bulk order of it. But other agencies had been buying their stuff up, because what we use is a system called Pepperball. And the Pepperball paintballs that we use is from a company called Live X, or that's the, excuse me, Pepperball creates something called Live X. Live X is 10 times stronger than the average pepper spray. And it sucks to be hit with. It's a powder form. And, you know, it is effective, but the stuff from Byrna is more effective. So between that and their hard impact projectiles, they actually have demonstrations where they're using the solid plastic hard projectiles and they're penetrating, and I mean easily penetrating, the windows of an automobile. All right. Windows of an automobile are actually very resilient to blunt force. So that is very impressive for me, because there are multiple videos, especially law enforcement based, where they're using Byrna and they are putting down officers left and right, not just with the chemical, but also with the hard impact projectiles. Now, obviously, that's not something that you would want to use to hit somebody in the face with, but if need be, to save your life, you do what you got to do. But it is a good alternative for people who don't want a pistol. The projectiles will fire, I think, about 60 feet away. Obviously, for the kinetic value, you're not going to get that out of the plastic, the hard plastic. But for the chemical-filled paintballs, 60 feet away is great. You know, that's a good distance to keep somebody away from you. And just think about it like this. If you have that, if you're in that situation and you have people coming to your house, you have people picketing and rioting your house, or if you happen to be within the driving area of a riot or a protest that's locked down an entire group or an entire street, you know, and you need standoff weapons. Chemical gas is always what law enforcement uses, and now you have the ability to put that in your own hands. Just understand, once again, you are held responsible for every round that comes out of a self-defense weapon, something that's less than lethal, like a taser or the Byrna, and also anything that's fired out of a firearm. You are held, to a certain extent, fully responsible for the impact. So just understand that. Learn the laws of where you live at. Talk to an attorney if you need to. Call Byrna. Get their counsel if you need to. I do not get paid to say that. They're not a sponsor. I wish. I love Byrna's products. I love Byrna's products. I actually believe in their product. So there's my spiel for you. Once again, that's Byrna, B-Y-R-N-A. Moving on. So I'm sure many of you have heard about this already, but lawmakers are warning that submitting samples of DNA to all these private companies like 23andMe, Ancestry.com, you know, whatever these other companies are, where you spit in a cup or you use a cotton swab, you know, mouth swab. When you turn over that data, all right, your DNA, it goes to these private companies, and then from there they sell your DNA, which means they franchise your DNA, and you no longer have the ability to say what can or cannot be done with it. Yeah, sure, you may find out that you got a little bit more Irish in you than everyone else. That's great, that's cool, but the other side to this is very disturbing. Sharon Gilbert, probably back in 2018 at one of Steve Quayle's conferences, we were there, and she was talking about how this practice of more or less selling away your DNA just for a few, you know, results in your ancestry actually was not smart, because it could be used harmfully against you in biowarfare, or people could clone your DNA and make a clone of you, and you would have no say over it. And, you know, even then, I was like, you know, she's onto something here. All right, but I don't understand the full application of it. Well, now Congress has been briefed in the application of this, okay? So this is a article coming to us from One American News, and it says that lawmakers warn of emerging biochemical weapons. So lawmakers are warning that submitting samples of DNA to private companies may hand over valuable information to America's adversaries. Sites like 23andMe could pose immense national security risk. At a recent Aspen Security Summit, Army veteran and Democrat Representative Jason Crow of Colorado warned America's enemies, including Russia and China, are developing biochemical weapons that could target specific people. Crow added researchers are using DNA data provided to private companies to tailor the weapons to that genetic information, however. He lamented, adversaries can get this information easily and without much of a fight. Quote, you can't have a discussion about this without talking about privacy and the protection of commercial data because expectations of privacy have degraded the last 20 years. Young folks actually have very little expectation of privacy. That's what the poll and the data shows. And people will very rapidly spit into a cup and send it to 23andMe and get really interesting data about their background. And guess what? Their DNA is now owned by a private company that can be sold off with very little intellectual property protections or privacy protections. Now, Dave Hodges of The Common Sense Show went over this very same subject matter several years ago, and China had more or less put out an article from one of their guys that worked at the Communist Party. I believe he's still there, and his name was Wei Fang. And Wei Fang discussed the ability to use biowarfare, germ warfare, and he said that they were creating or had created a weapon that could be used specifically solely in America against, hear me out, against anyone that is not of Chinese descent. Chinese, specific, Chinese descent, not Asian descent, Chinese descent. Here's the reason why I think that's viable right now. We are coming into a headway with China. We are eventually going to have to confront China militarily, or they're going to have to confront us. One of us is going to move, one of us is going to blink, and the other one is going to steamroll the other one. That could be done economically. If it is done economically, from the word on the street that I got many years ago from Army intelligence officers, is that all China is waiting for is for our U.S. dollar to crumble on the world stage. IMF then revalues our currency, and now China becomes top dog, number one for the International Monetary Fund. Everybody is using the Chinese yuan, or whatever it is that the BRICS Nations Alliance is going to create for currency. America, supposedly, is in such debt that we may actually tumble all the way to the ranking of 13, not 2, not 3, but fall beyond 10. We would be lower on the scale than many of the countries that we right now send money out to for aid. If they do that, the word on the street is that China would then be bolstered enough to combat us with the Navy. So that would be the South China Sea contestants. And then from there, the Pacific. And then from there, mainland. Now, China needs America. China needs our industry. China needs our money. But China, more than anything else, needs our land and our agriculture. We have some of the best temperate places on earth for growing fruit, for growing vegetables, and for a mass amount of cattle and pork, which is a lot of their people that eat pork. You got to understand something, and not just that, poultry as well, right? So the ability to capture another nation violently or not violently, and then to completely hold within your hand their entire industry, you're unstoppable at that point. Nation rising against nation, kingdom versus kingdom, ethnos versus ethnos, whoever fights America and wins holds the power for the rest of the world. How would they do it? If you were China, would you want to invade having a more or less untested, unproven serviceman? You know, America, we have generation stacked on top of generation of warfighters, of good old boys, of patriots, of people who will not be bullied. They will not be pushed to the side. They will not be captured, China would have quite the fight on their hands. And China can field 1 billion people. It's not enough to take over America. It's just not enough. Look at all the weaponry that we have here. You can legally own tanks. You can legally own fighter jets if you got enough money. There are some guys out there like Tom Cruise who has it. Plenty of people have high caliber weapons. Plenty of people have machine guns. Plenty of people within this country know how to make explosives. We see it, unfortunately, all the time in law enforcement. So now take an outside invading force and think of what that force could or could not do against our population. Would they need an upper hand? Well, I'll tell you this much. Germ warfare against the average person is the upper hand. If you release the Black Plague throughout D.C., 90% of the population will be affected, and 99% of that population affected will not have an answer for germ warfare or nerve agents or chemical warfare. You know, Antifa likes to show up with their little plastic drums and their garbage canned shields and, you know, the second and third used gas mask and filters. That's not going to work, boys and girls, against nerve agents. Not only that, but then you start to consider what it can do to the population of the animals that we think will thrive upon during a shit hit the fan, you know, scenario. There are plenty of good old boys out there who'll say, I'll survive on the trout, the deer. I'll survive on the turkeys, on the moose, on the elk, and I'm with you. I would love to eat elk for the rest of my life, my favorite meat. However, I know for a fact that if you were diabolical enough, you don't have to rain down fire from the sky. Release the nerve agent. Release the germ warfare. Rot the city from the inside out, and you'll be able to walk right in it as its firstborn master. This is the warfare. This is that fifth generation warfare that we're looking at now. And, you know, honestly, America, we don't have an answer for that. You know, maybe the doctors can get together and give us some good ideas. But, you know, outside of having the top rated gas mask and filters with the powered air units and Tyvek suits and knowing decontamination procedures. I mean, not everybody can do that. And not everybody knows the know-how. Not everybody has the money to field that. So, you know, it's, and I don't mean to be adversarial when I say this. I don't mean to be pessimistic. That is war. That is what it is. There's no changing that. We got to understand that if you kill off all the animals, if you kill off all the plants, if you poison the water, the population will crumble. The population will falter. The population will capitulate and surrender. We've done that. You know, armies throughout the entire history of the world have used plague-based weapons to siege upon other cities. Just consider Lamentations if you need to. Just consider how many different times diseased bodies were put on trebuchets by the Romans and tossed back into other kingdoms, right over the walls, right over the forts, right into the population. Is this where we're going? Possibly. Don't ever take it off the table. You don't live in this will never happen to me land. Listen to this. Additionally, Republican Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, said that the threat of a biochemical attack won't just hit humans specifically, but also the food supply. She stressed, America's adversaries could weaponize diseases that have already plagued the agricultural sector to kill off animals and plants used for food. Quote, so not necessarily those specific human targets with a particular type of weaponized biological weapon, but also if we looked at food security and what can our adversaries do with biological weapons that are directed at our animal agriculture, at our agricultural sector? We don't have an answer for it, guys. You know, once again, you know what this really comes down to? It comes down to the reason why I harp on community preparedness, but nobody freaking takes it seriously. Just like how nobody takes it seriously when the active shooter happens until it's happening in their presence. Nobody takes their physical training serious until they need to exert every amount of force in their body to survive a scenario. All right. It's something that we talk about in the government as Operation Knee-Jerk Reaction. Okay, something bad happens. Now everybody nationwide has to adapt to this one stupid thing that just happened. Nobody cared about COVID. And then all of a sudden everybody did. Just think, monkeypox is on the rise. COVID is coming back. Now we got the stupid ninja COVID variant. Don't forget, there are other diseases out there, like the plague, like SARS, like MERS, like Ebola. And you have terrorist organizations just dying to get their hands on stuff like this, like China, and then spreading it to their enemies and taking full advantage of it. China wants nothing more than to see the empire of America collapse so that they can become the number one empire of the world. Of course, right after that, they have to defeat Russia. And they would. The reason why I say they would is because the Russians will use compassion. Even though everybody talks about the Ruskies being what they are, there's still compassion within those people. I've seen it. And people will disagree or agree about their ideology or about their dogmatic religions, their Orthodox Christian religion. But if they still practice any sort of peace, any sort of loving your neighbor and loving your enemy, as Christ teaches us. Well, China doesn't. China does not believe in that. China believes in conquering, in ruling, in destroying. So, that's why it's very important right now to be getting ready for any of this type of crap to happen. Army General Richard Clark claimed that bad actors have been quick to use other chemical weapons with relative ease. He cited alleged uses of chlorine and mustard gas being used in Iraq and Syria by ISIS. General Clark warned, even these weapons do not need complex training in order to use them. In the meantime, the congressman that we were speaking about urged their colleagues to adopt legislation which could bolster protections for Americans' personal information. This includes healthcare, DNA, and consumer patterns, which already I don't trust that either. Additionally, they also stressed the need to add food security in the realm of national security in order to put more attention on America's food supply chain. I want to give you a good quote from Niccolo Machiavelli. People should either be caressed or crushed. If you do them minor damage, they will get the revenge. But if you cripple them, there is nothing they can do. If you need to injure someone, do it in such a way that you do not have to fear their vengeance. That is the realm that China operates on. So to finish this off, I want to bring back up again my mindset on becoming a strategic asset. This is my mission statement. I want you to be set up for success. I want myself to be set up for success. No matter the situation or the disaster, be an asset that is worth being relied upon. So how do we become an asset? Well, the definition of being an asset as it stands would involve a person with particular usefulness based upon their specific skills and skill sets and the level of their skills, usefulness that can be applied for beneficiary purposes. Examples: laborers with general construction-based knowledge, electricians, engineers, carpenters, masons, welders, plumbers, and mechanics. Then you move on to your more technical skills like dentists and doctors and nurses, and then to the really technical stuff like software engineers and computer experts. Obviously, a society after a collapse would benefit from these occupations, but what about the ethics and the law portion? First responders, like firefighters and EMS and the police. All of these positions are important to making a society function. You know who's not going to have a place in the society once shit hits the fan? The people on TikTok taking pictures of themselves all day. The mom and dad who create a little kid show and try to entertain people and put it on some sort of social media platform to get 5 minutes of fame and a little bit of money from clout and following. They're not going to make it. Have the ability to be called an asset, even if it's canning the food, if it's baking the cookies that keeps the morale up. The problem with this self-indulgent society that we live in right now is that people live inside their phone, they live inside their head, and they need the admiration from people. Look at me in my lipstick and my tight pants and while I flex in front of a mirror while my phone's being held up. You know, what do they call those people? Some sort of like social media follower people? Stupid. That's what I call them. Stupid. Stupid, self-indulgent, filled full of pride. And they're not going to know what happens the first time they get hit in the face. That's what life does. Life says, oh, hey, is that your plan? Cool plan. And then stomps you into the ground. And then says, I hope you had a backup. And guess what? A lot of these people, especially, you know, within these younger generations, they don't have backup plans. They want to get rich fast. They want to get as many likes and as views as possible and expect their career to carry them out on social media and entertaining people. Look at some of these guys on YouTube, all right? Grown men making thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars or more playing video games and letting other people watch how they play video games. Unreal. Unreal. So, what else could be an asset? Well, when the prophecy hits the fan, just consider this. How many of these occupations that I have previously listed will still be showing up for their 9-to-5 jobs when the country goes into complete panic and collapses due to whatever reason? The EMP threat, the cyber threat, the biochemical warfare threat. We got invaded. The economy collapses. We have a civil war. Figure out what your doomsday disaster scenario is and just consider, if it all goes bad, will the people who maintain the normal life, like everyday city dwellers, still show up for their work? Maybe at first, but eventually they will be forced to take care of their own people. Then we get into the harder to speak on conversation topics like, who comes to fix my broken pipes after a winter storm? My septic system's backed up. Who's going to come and drain it for me? Who repairs my generator when it stops running, let alone who becomes the available gas station? Do you not think that gas stations will become an asset worthy of protecting? Trust me, they will. What about the pharmacies? I would put so much security on a pharmacy that you would have a better look at robbing the bank down the street rather than visiting any of my pharmacies with malice. What about the hospital and all of its employees? During any type of disaster, does a hospital become probably the second or even the first most valuable asset in a community? Would you not relocate other assets such as the security personnel to a hospital, also having mass storage for gasoline and diesel to keep up the power? Speaking of security, community preparation. Prepare overall maps for your community and the most valuable assets in your communities, and don't forget where food comes from. Your farms and ranches are probably your second most valuable commodities in your community. Overlays of security for these maps, hospitals, energy power, your entrance and exit portals, food storage, barracks for security forces, hardened structures for the civilian populations, rings of perimeter security both internally and externally, 9 sectors of security if you can have it, from the most internal and then progressing out all the way out. List of emergency personnel, staff, and alternates in case those staff members are incapable of fulfilling their duties. List of leadership for various roles and their alternates. Sources of communication that can be salvaged. Munitions and weapons to include armories and distribution centers for the arms in case of an invasion. Water filtration systems. underground bunkers and hardened structures where water and food rations can be stored, ancient wellsprings that can be tapped into during a time of great need. Estimates of diseases, once the community has been locked down and life-saving services start going offline. Estimate of the medicine, if a mass plague or infection breaks out in the community. Types of diseases, symptoms, severity of contagion, if the food and water sources are fouled. Also, what remedial measures are in place in case of such an incident were to occur? Can you back up the backups? What about your triage areas, your grave digging details? Endless screening of how your supplies are being sustained and secured down to the smallest detail of expiration dates and items that are mildewed due to an inequality in the humidity inside the storage areas because you don't have power anymore. Inspections on food stocks to be performed daily and recorded. Every ration taken either from a person eating it or the ration being disposed of due to whatever ailments must be recorded. There will be rumors, conspiracies of factions hoarding rations for themselves and their families. This is unavoidable and is why an accurate, stringent account of all food rations must be kept and must be protected at the highest levels of security. Food controls the behavior of the weak-minded in the desperate. A fortress can implode from within based solely on conspiracies and factions in the community. Do not underestimate the depravity of man. Do not take inner security for granted. In my honest opinion, in the matters of security, we need to take a long, hard look at what emergency happens. We must go beyond the ideas of the Minuteman militias due to the interference from the federal government and the lack of accountability in our current foreign militias nationwide, based either on from the lack of technical proficiency or with a major in tactical applications, or from minor of the government infiltration and the frequency and sabotage by the FBI, the state and federal agencies. I would declare any and all large foreign militias to be hereby compromised from the internal level. Meaning you need something completely new. Instead of forming a militia filled full of unknowns, turn yourself and the reliable men and women that you can trust into a strategic national asset. For in the day that it comes where the need arises that men must be called to combat in an external conflict or the invasion from an external threat, it will be your decision to participate in our nation's defense, your community defense, your state defense, your personal defense, your family's defense, or to not engage at all. If you decide to engage in the defense of our nation, you must understand the rules of war during the current period, which can change rapidly with the introduction of chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear weapons. The theater of war will also vary based on troop strength and weaponry. This conflict that I'm speaking about will be nationwide, most likely be even higher. Likely your threat of operations will be on the state, the county, and city level as well. You must secure your base of operations first, right? Before moving to any asset or moving to assist others, you must be able to have a defense force in place when you go to leave. So it can't just be every man grab their arms and flee and leave the women and children, the sick and the elderly by themselves with no defense. A defense force's only occupation is the defense of their territory. All other forward applied forces will have to be carefully calculated in their deployments into what theaters they are most needed in. We must remember during this conflict, the resources are limited and a resupply of major logistical items like food and water, ammunition and fuel, medicine probably won't be pliable. Also, just to speak on this and to rub some salt into the wounds of a few people, I highly recommend you get an AR-15. I highly recommend you get a semi-automatic pistol, a Glock, something. Right, I like Glocks. Glocks are absolutely proven weapons. They're a beast of a handgun. Right, you know they're not a Magnum. You know, there's not a lot of cool factors in it. The gun just works and is too easy to field strip, too easy to replace parts. Glock 19s, Glock 22s, 40 Smith & Wesson, 9mm, 45 ACP, you know, whatever it is that you want. Glocks just work. If you're the guy who says, well, you know, I got my M1 Garand or my M14 or whatever random freaking weapon that's out there, you know, hey, man, you shoot 30-06, that's cool. That's a hell of a round coming at you, and I don't want to be hit by it. However, the average thing that people shoot in the world are 5.56, 223, and 7.62 by 51. So that's AR-15 platforms, M4 platforms, and then AK-47s. Next thing, you have 12-gauge shotguns, okay? If you just roundabout continuously progress to purchase weapons like that, remember this is a theoretical, all right? During a hyper, extremely dangerous time, we're talking about civil conflict, like a civil war, it would probably be more beneficial for you to have one of these weapons so that you'll find the ammunition and the magazine spent on the battlefield than having to scour for some random round, some random caliber that nobody else carries. 308s are good. 6.5 Creedmoor is good. 5.56, 223, 30-06, 270. You know, the normal hunting rounds that Americans have, right? 7mm. You start to get into some of the more advanced stuff, you're probably not going to find very much 300 Win Mag. You're probably not going to find very much 338 Lapua Magnum or 50 cal. You know, you're probably not going to find too much 300 Black. So I would say, you know, keep a very simple platform. And also, you may own 20 or 30 guns. You're going to carry two. Most likely just two. If you're really hardcore, you'll carry three or four. But ounces equal pounds, pounds equal pain, and very quickly after your first or second time of walking out of the line, trying to look like John Rambo with your crossbow and your compound bow and your spear and your gigantic bowie knife and sword and, you know, thinking that you're going to LARP your way through a battlefield, you're going to quickly realize that all you really need is one main battle rifle and then a sidearm and then a good knife. That's all we carried in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's typically all anyone carries. If you are of the sniper type and you want to carry your long rifle, fine, do it. Be that guy. Know the application of that weapon. You know, this is the struggle that we have in America right now, trying to get people in this proper mindset. I say this really because I think we're eventually going to come to this type of conflict in America. And it's not going to be up to just the veterans and just law enforcement and just current military. It's going to be up to everyone who wants to be in the engagement. Get your training. Prepare your body now. For those of you that this applies to, consider it. Pass this information along to others. One of the things that I was always very good at was logistically planning for things and then poking holes in other people's plans. There's always something that you missed. There's always something that you didn't double check. So have your plan, practice your plan, and have your buddies review your plan, your bug out plan, your bug out location. You know, if you're going to bug in, have somebody try and break into your home. Obviously not break windows, but, you know, test your plan. Don't think just because you saw it in a movie that it's going to work. That's not real life. Well, to end this up, I'm going to hit you up with one more quote. This is from Archilochus, the warrior, poet, and mercenary from Greece. Be brave, my heart. Plant your feet and square your shoulders to the enemy. Meet him among the man-killing spears. Hold your ground. In victory, do not brag. In defeat, do not weep. And remember, war is work. Put your hands to the work first, and others will see your example, and they will follow your footsteps. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Remember, don't forget to train, to prep, to pray. Stay frosty. The enemy's out there. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.